every I'm right here on Progressive Radio Network as we bring you the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And that's myself, Ellen Camai, the Natural Nurse. You can find me at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. And we have been actually bringing radio both on air. Remember, it used to be only on air. Okay, well, we started in the 1980s with our show, Natural Alternatives, which still airs every week on Long Island, and we have a show called Herbally Yours that comes out also on actually on the air. So you can check our websites for times and dates of all those shows. And of course, this show here, The Natural Nurse with Dr. Z, is so phenomenally available because it is archived right here on Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm, where you can listen live each Tuesday or tune in anytime 24/7 to the archives. While you're there, you can listen to many other wonderful shows, and they're all brought to you by Progressive Radio Network. We have as our guest today Dr. David Borenstein, MD, and we're going to introduce him. He obtained his medical degrees in Israel and also at Staten Island University Hospital, and he completed residencies at the University of Stony Brook, where I am an affiliate as well, and Westchester County Medical Center and St. Charles Hospital and Rehab Center. And during the course of his career, he attended a lot of specialized training courses in order to expand the scope of his medical practice. And he is board certified in physical medicine, rehabilitation, and in medical acupuncture. And after his residency, Dr. Borenstein was involved in an integrative medical center, and I also, of course, was involved with Dr. Serafina Corsello as her head nurse for 20 years. We had one of the early on integrative medical centers, and Dr. Borenstein became impressed by the effectiveness of the treatments that were offered there. The experience led him to incorporate many integrative approaches, including prolotherapy and stem cell therapy, into his medical practice. He likes to get to know his patients, listen to them as individuals, and understand the symptoms that are the starting points for his treatment protocols. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Borenstein.
Thank you, and good morning.
And so you've had a long road. When you originally began to investigate medicine as a career, were you already interested in what might be termed natural therapies, or did you have more of a conventional outlook at that point?
Well, initially, like most medical students, I had a very conventional outlook. And during medical school, I started to become interested in natural and integrative therapies and techniques. The problem is that's not very encouraged in medical school, and it certainly wasn't encouraged in medical school 20 years ago. So it's something that you kind of kept to yourself. However, when I went to my residency program, my director was somewhat more open to it, and I was able to explore it more. And finally, when I graduated and I started practicing medicine, I took courses, I worked in integrative medical centers, and gradually developed a practice in integrative medicine.
Well, I will say at Stony Brook, actually, in the Department of Family Medicine, they're quite open to integrative therapies. I'm not sure which department you were associated with at Stony Brook.
Yes, but the Family Medicine department is certainly very open. However, other departments in the hospital are certainly not as open to it.
Yeah, that's true. Even to this day, it's quite amazing.
It is.
Now, you have a practice right in New York, and it's called New York Stem Cell Treatment Center. So certainly that must be a real focus on your what you do there.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have two practices. I have the New York Stem Cell Treatment Center, which is primarily for treating patients with stem cells. My other practice is Manhattan Integrative Medicine, which is a comprehensive integrative medicine facility where I treat patients for fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, hormone replacement, low-dose naltrexone.
Are those two different places? Because I don't have the website for the second one. What one is that?
It's same exact office, same exact place. The website for the integrative medical practice is www.davidborenstein.md.com.
Just your name. Okay, that's easy to find. Because I'm looking at the website here about stem cell, because I want to tell you a little story, and our listeners as well. And, of course, we're going to want your professional commentary about that, because I was on the airplane, and people seem to always have seen me somewhere on television or heard me on radio, and actually someone on the airplane said that. She recognized me, and that she was coming home from Florida, where she was getting stem cell therapy somewhere in Miami, that was due to, she didn't tell me the exact diagnosis, but it was some kind of very severe pain in her hip, and she had been scheduled for surgery, and instead she tried stem cell, and she found that it was effective. She was able to avoid surgery through the use of this.
Absolutely. Stem cells treatment works extremely well for orthopedic injuries, and not just the hip, the knee, the shoulders, the neck, the back, elbows, wrists, ankles. So it works extremely well. And the beauty of stem cells is that you're using your own body's ability to heal. There's no foreign body placed inside the hip or the knee. It's your own body's ability to heal. And I think that's the best way to heal, rather than having an artificial device inside your body.
So now, how would it work? I actually have a patient, so I'm just asking your professional opinion about this, who has a ripped rotator cuff, which is not a bone issue, as you know. And they've been told that, to try to sew that back together, it might not actually help anyway surgically. So is that something that might be aided, or does it need to be bone-related?
No, it does need to be bone-related, but basically I want to tell people what a stem cell is and how it works.
Let's go back to that. That's an excellent idea. They probably have heard of stem cell because it was a politically very hot issue. The last administration did not allow it, and then it opened up to be more available with the newer administration. So they may have heard it on the news in a political sense.
Right, because the issue with that was that the stem cells were coming from embryos. Okay, the stem cells we use are autologous, which means they come from the patient. So there's not much in the way of controversy, and that's a really big differentiation between the two. Basically, what is a stem cell? It has two properties. It's a cell that can replicate, which means it can make a copy of itself, and differentiate, so it can become a primitive cell into more advanced cell, a kidney cell, liver cell, in very simple terms. So that's the difference. And these stem cells have a lot of healing properties. How they heal is very simple to explain, but very complicated in its mechanism. These adult stem cells are known as progenitor cells, which means they go around looking for injury. They don't do very much if there's no injury, but there's injury, it goes around and tries to heal the injury. We don't know if it makes new tissue. We don't know if it repairs the tissue that's there, but basically that's how it works. And, again, it uses the body's own growth factors to rebuild and fix the tissue that's injured.
So it's actually extracted from the patient who it's going to be used on.
Yes, exactly.
That's what she had, too, because she said they took it from her own fat or some tissue. And that it really was very, very effective.
Yes, it is. Now, there are two ways we can get stem cells, or two places we can get stem cells from. One is from bone marrow, and one is from fat. The problem with bone marrow is It's painful. And the bone marrow doesn't have enough cells. So what you need to do is you need to cultivate it. You need to grow them over a period of several days or several weeks. You can't do that legally in the United States, so that's a big problem. What people have to do is they have to go overseas, or centers in the United States send the cells to a foreign entity, have it grown there, and bring them back. But that's not 100% allowed by the FDA, because the FDA rules say that any cell you have, you can only manipulate minimally. So what you do is with fat is, fat is loaded with stem cells. And actually, it's not even the fat. It's the connective tissue that surrounds the fat, loaded with stem cells. You don't have to cultivate it. The process of extracting the fat is done with a mini liposuction procedure, virtually painless, okay? And the whole procedure can be done in 3 hours. So that's the beauty of it. You don't have to go overseas. You can do it right here in the States. It's about a three-hour procedure, and we can get millions of cells the same day.
Oh, and then you use it the same. So, and then after you isolate just the stem cells from the tissue that you've withdrawn, then what is done to them? Are they treated in any way, or can they be kept overnight, or how are they handled beyond that?
Sure, here's the process. Basically, we do what they call a sub, we do a block just underneath the skin, a subdermal block with lidocaine and epinephrine, and once that's done, we extract the fat from using a mini liposuction procedure. We take about 50 cc's, so it's a kind of a good-sized syringe. We then process those cells. We have to break down the connective tissue that surrounds the fat, so we use something called collagenase. We add that, breaks down the stem cells and the other growth factors that are found. Then they're centrifuged and washed, so we wash it three times because this is partially going to be given to the patient in an intravenous form, so we have to make sure it's nice and sterile and clean. We wash it three times. We then filter the remaining cells through a filter, and then when we do an IV, an intravenous treatment, we have an additional filter right before it goes into the patient, so we make sure that it's clean, that there's no debris in it, and it's safe and sterile.
And then it is both injected and used intravenously back into the patient, like, let's say, in an affected area or just more generally?
Well, in most cases, in just about every thing that we treat, and there are many different things that we can use stem cells for, just about everyone gets an intravenous infusion. Then, depending on the problem, we then address that locally. For example, if a patient has an orthopedic issue, we direct it into the painful area. If the patient has asthma, COPD, or heart disease, we can give it via a nebulizer. So in some advanced cases, we've been able to give it right into the brain. We can actually have a neurosurgeon put a little reservoir where you can inject it right into the brain. Patients with TBI, traumatic brain injury, or patients with Alzheimer's may benefit from this. So we can deploy or give these stem cells a number of different ways. Primarily in my office, I give it either IV into a joint or through a nebulizer. And this way the stem cells, you know, get into the body and do its job of fixing and repairing.
So it can be given, like you're saying, in a more general sense. And it also could be focused towards an area that needs repair.
Yes, exactly.
Now, is this done all in the same day?
All within a few hours. It's done the same day. The patient comes in. We have them lie down on their belly. We usually take the fat from their love handles. One thing about fat is no one usually minds losing a little bit of fat. It's not a problem with most people. Take the fat out. I then do the processing in the room. The patient is cleaned up, bandaged, and has an hour and 15 minutes of free time. Usually they use that to go to Time Warner across the street or Central Park, and they come back an hour and 15 minutes later. We have the stem cells ready to go. And depending on their condition, we start the treatment. Usually we do an IV first. We get the IV out of the way. Now, in patients who have multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease, the brain has a barrier called the blood-brain barrier. So we have to try to penetrate through that barrier. We use something called mannitol, which opens up the channels, opens up the barrier. And then 20 minutes after giving the mannitol, we then give the stem cells so the stem cells can penetrate into the brain and into the spinal cord, right through the blood-brain barrier. In other entities, like if it's orthopedic or autoimmune, we don't need to do that. We just give the stem cells directly IV. It takes about half hour, 35 minutes at most. And if we need to do injections into a joint, we then can do it right into the joint. With the joint, we usually add something called platelet-rich plasma, which we get from the patient's blood, and we inject that in as well. We find that the stem cells work better with the platelet-rich plasma. And that usually only takes a few minutes, and then you're done.
And then what?
Then we follow up with the patient. Every patient that comes to us is part of a study, institutional board review study, and we follow up with the patient. And hopefully, in most cases, they do improve, and we do follow up with the patient to make sure that they are improving.
So it sounds like it could be used for a wide range of health issues.
Oh, absolutely. We use it for many different uses. We have a lot of patients with orthopedic issues, knees, hips, elbows, shoulders, back, necks. Also for patients with neurological disorders, multiple sclerosis, neuropathy, Parkinson's. We have been doing some work with ALS and stroke. These are can be very debilitating, and we don't have much out there. So many patients will try to use stem cells to improve their neurological conditions. We've had a lot of patients with asthma, people with heart failure, cardiomyopathy, asthma, lung disease, people after a myocardial infarction, after a heart attack, and a lot of autoimmune diseases, Crohn's, arthritis, lupus, autoimmune hepatitis, myasthenia gravis. So we have a lot of things that can be treated using stem cells.
And let's go through, let's say, one specific patient, what they presented with, and, you know, if you had a follow-up, what the outcome was.
Sure. I've had several patients with multiple sclerosis. We have a lot of multiple sclerosis patients who come to see us. Matter of fact, they come from far away. They come from Florida. We have patients come from Tennessee, upstate New York. They come from all over. And the first patient we did with MS had an amazing response. She had a lot of pain in her cheek. She had vision issues. And her response was extremely dramatic. She, you know, did extremely well. Her face pain went away. Her strength improved. Dramatic response. Then we had another patient from Tennessee who had a response, but not as a dramatic response, but definitely improved her strength in her extremities where she was weak. Improvement in her vision. But here's an interesting thing, which we found. She had only one kidney. She didn't come to me for her kidneys. She came to me for MS. She's been having kidney problems for a long period of time. A few weeks after we gave her the stem cells, she went to her nephrologist for a follow-up visit. And the nephrologist says, I don't know what happened, but your kidney function is much better than it's ever been since the removal of your one kidney. And he goes, I can't explain it. And she then told him that several weeks earlier that she had a stem cell procedure done. And the doctor was quite impressed. And now, instead of following her up every 3 months, follows her up every 6 months. So there's a possibility that just giving the IV stem cells could fix other problems in the body that we even know about.
Yeah, that's true with natural medicine in general. which is why I often talk about things, even milder therapies. You know, this is a pretty big commitment to get this kind of therapy. But even using something like herbs and massage, and of course you are a licensed acupuncturist, which we'll talk about as well. In many cases, when we use natural remedies, we see that all the time, which is that basically whatever the person used it for may get helped or completely resolved, but also what we might call additional effects rather than adverse effects is the fact that something else also gets taken care of. Like, for instance, they don't have headaches anymore, or they don't wake up with the congestion, all kinds of positive effects. So this is pretty dramatic that you actually got, you know, help for the kidney, rather than thinking that someone who only had one kidney should not go through this therapy.
Right. Well, you know, the procedure is very safe, and I've had a patient who was in his 80s get the procedure. We had absolutely no problems. It's a pretty, you know, pretty safe procedure, easy to do. The only people who I would not recommend get this procedure is those who have an active malignancy. Then you really don't want to have this procedure done. Any recent dental work or active infections, these are the people who you really, you know, don't want to have do this procedure. But other than that, most people are candidates for this procedure if, you know, if they have one of the problems that I listed earlier. And, you know, the beauty is that you're using, again, you're using regenerative medicine. You're using your body's own ability to heal. And nothing better than that.
So you said a very important thing there, doctor. But you know what? We're going to take a little break right here, and then we will come back and continue our discussion. We're speaking today with Dr. David Borenstein, and you can find out all the things he does at davidborensteinmd.com or nystemcellcenter.com. The number there is 212-262-2412. And all of Dr. Borenstein's contact information will also be on the archives right here on Progressive Radio Network. So we will be right back with more.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla, called sarsaparin, greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sauce Sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
With our guest, Dr. David Borenstein, MD, and we're talking about stem cell therapy, and we'll also talk about other topics because Dr. Borenstein manages a full integrative medicine center right in Manhattan, and his phone number there is 212-262-2412. And Dr. Borenstein, when you are doing stem cell therapy, how would you decide if a client is eligible?
Well, basically, we always have to examine the patient and get a complete history and physical examination. We have to be very straight, honest with our patient. And I always tell my patients that stem cell therapy is amazing. It's great. But not every patient gets better on it. Not every patient is going to get benefit, and depending on the severity, I can usually tell them approximately what I think their chances are improving. So as long as the patient is aware of the procedure, the risks, and the chances of success, you know, we educate the patient and we let the patient make the decision if he or she wants to go with stem cell therapy.
Well, you have a very good section on your website at New York Stem Cell Treatment Center that answers a lot of these questions, like what are some of the things that you don't cover? So these are interesting that you say that you're not using it for autism.
We're currently using it for autism, although that's something that we may be doing in the future. There's a center that's affiliated with my network that I'm working with that actually does it for autism in the Philippines. And what they do is they match the patient's parents, and they use the patient's parents' stem cells, if it matches, for autism. And the preliminary results have been excellent. But that's not something we're doing here in the States yet.
Okay, so it has been used for that. Now, what about once the cells are harvested, because you talked about the fact that you're using cells from the person's own body that are basically already mature versus embryonic. What is the difference there? Why would you choose to use this rather than embryonic tissue?
Well, there are a lot of moral issues with the embryos, and they're not exactly easy to get. So it's just much better to get the stem cells from the patient. We can get it the same day. There's no moral issues with embryos. So it's just a much easier, more elegant, and less controversial way of obtaining stem cells from the patient.
Now, what about once you've harvested them and prepared them, can you reuse it another time? Like, do you store them at all, or do they have to be used that exact day?
Excellent question. Yes, they have to use them that same day for the deployment. However, in the very near future, and I mean the very near future, certainly in the next couple of months, what we're going to be able to do is, and this is really exciting, we're going to be able to take the fat from the patient and then have it sent to a facility where they're stored. And this way we can use the stem cells again without doing the liposuction procedure. But here's the real exciting thing. We'll be able to take those stem cells, send it to a facility, and they'll be able to make as many copies of the stem cells as we need. So we can do one liposuction procedure. Let's say a patient is doing really well on stem cells, but, you know, after a few months, after 6 months or so, they're not doing as well. We can just make a phone call, have the stem cells delivered to our office the next day, and we can deploy those cells. And because the banking facility will be able to manufacture and just make more and more of these cells, make copies of them, we can have an endless supply of stem cells for the patient. And if they need treatment every 6 months, if they need it every year, we'll have the ability to deploy it without doing any sort of liposuction procedure. That's coming. That's the wave of the future.
And that's called cell banking?
That's called cell banking, yes.
Okay, so this is an up-and-coming new procedure that you'll be able to take part in. Now, I know this has been going on, I guess, for a longer period of time in other countries rather than the United States. Is that true?
Yes, primarily in Europe and some of the offshore countries, Bahamas or Panama, but primarily in Europe, where they have more freedom to do these sort of things than we do in the States.
There. Yeah, so they've been doing it for a much longer time.
Yes, they have.
And what do you think the problem is? Why is it not more widespread in terms of conventional medical use, since it seems to be so effective as well as being low risk?
Several issues. Number one is it's not nearly as well studied as other medications or drugs. It's not a drug, and that's another issue I think that may be a reason why it hasn't caught on. And remember, we're at the very preliminary stages of our knowledge in stem cells. Just to give you an analogy, let's take a look at the discovery of penicillin. When penicillin was discovered, what did the doctors do? They gave one dose and they said, hope for the best. The patient responded or they didn't respond. Fast forward a number of years later, we now have protocols how much to give, how long to give it for, how many times a day. So you know, as a nurse, you know you give penicillin 3 times a day for 10 days, or you give it 2 times a day for 2 weeks. Well, these protocols developed because people experimented and they tried to find which way was the best in giving the medication, and they found that for this disease, it worked well this way. For another disease, it worked that well that way. So that's what we're kind of doing now with the stem cells. So we're kind of at that stage. That being said, we've had a lot of success just giving one deployment or two deployments of stem cells. But all of our patients are enrolled in a study, and they'll be helping with future research in stem cells. Probably in the next couple of years, more research will come out, more literature will come out, and this will certainly be a more accepted sort of treatment.
Well, tell me about the study, because it does say that several of your patients do participate in studies, but it's not mandatory for them to.
That's correct. They don't have to do it, but most patients are interested because they do want to help other people. We follow up with you every 3 months and then every 6 months to see how well you're doing. It's basically a very short questionnaire. And each disease has its own separate questionnaire, and we ask detailed questions. Are you getting better? Is this better? How are you improving? And we collect the data. So far we have, from multiple centers, close to 3,000 patients, and that's certainly increasing all the time. And once the data is published, we think that this will be more accepted, and then we can go to the FDA and we can say, hey, you know, this is... we treated so many patients with this entity. Can this be an accepted treatment for this particular problem? And then we can then say, you know, this can be used for treating, you know, this problem or that problem. But again...
So right now, if people choose to use this, it's not necessarily an FDA-approved treatment, because usually FDA-approved treatments are also very specific, like a treatment for this or that, and even many drugs are used in what we call off-use ways, where it might be used for a different problem than it's FDA-approved for.
That's exactly it. Now, the position is that because this is a surgical technique or procedure, not a drug, that a lot of the FDA regulations don't apply. That being said, the equipment is certainly FDA-approved. So we have to at least get that, and which we have. But we cannot technically say this is, you know, a cure for this problem or that problem. But since, as you said earlier, you can use it what they call off-label, because everything that we use has already been FDA approved, all the equipment and all of the techniques. So that would not be, that's certainly not a problem.
But it's not something that has a specific treatment code associated with it. It's more a self-choice option that you can make the decision with along with your physician. And obviously you would have to be a physician who's well-versed in stem cell therapy like yourself.
That's correct, yes.
Now, let me ask you about another topic for right now, the Naval Expo. And people can find out more about the Naval Expo at navalexpo.com. The Naval Expo is run in various arenas, including Manhattan and Long Island. We have one coming up in Long Island November 8th. I will be a speaker there. In fact, I'll be the main speaker at 9 a.m. talking about the issues with genetically modified food, and also at 4 p.m. I'll be discussing herbal medicine. Now, I know, Dr. Borenstein, you were recently involved with the Naval Expo as well.
Yes, I've spoken at two Naval Expos. My first talk was on prolyl therapy and platelet-rich plasma, and I just spoke very recently at the last Naval Expo on the use of stem cells. And I think they only limit us to 20 minutes in each talk, but it was quite well attended, and certainly had a lot of interest and a lot of talking after the talk.
And you know, listeners, you can always check into Naval Expo, NavelExpo.com, and they list the dates of all upcoming Naval Expos. And we've been doing some lectures as well, which they're recording, so I think they're going to have video access all the time to a lot of the topics that we present through Naval Expo. So it's very exciting that you're involved in that, Dr. Borenstein, because it's an ongoing event. Like you said, you lectured there a couple of years ago, or last time, and then again this time. So if people check there any time, they'll find out when the next one is coming up. Now, I love the term regenerative medicine. What do you mean by that?
Well, regenerative medicine is basically the body ability to regrow and heal itself. It's just an amazing, amazing way of and a relatively new sort of treatment. We can define regenerative medicine as a process of creating living functional tissues to repair or replace tissues or organ function due to damage, congenital defects. And basically what we're doing, the PRP, the prolotherapy, and the stem cells, are a form of regenerative medicine.
Yes, both of those things are. Well, you've spoken a couple times about prolotherapy. So what we're going to do is take a little station identification right here. And when we come back, that'll be a whole other topic for us to discuss. Many people have not heard of prolotherapy. We had it at Dr. Grisella's office. Oh, it's over 20 years ago, I'm sure. And it's really, really was very helpful for many patients. So we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. David Borenstein about his center. You can find out more at davidborensteinmd.com or nystemcellcenter.com. And you can always look for all contact information on our archives. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
PRN.FM, your source for progressive radio that makes a difference.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sliva with Nature Bats Last Radio on PRN.FM. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24-7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM.
Hi. Hi, I'm Bhavani, and I'd like to invite you to tune into my show, I Eat Green, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. to hear the latest news about our health, the environment, and the good food movement. I'll also share with you one of my favorite recipes, so tune in on Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Keep listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
More right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And this show is brought to you weekly by myself, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone. You can join us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And right now we are taking registration for our Echo Tours for Cures to Jamaica, where we actually take people to live with shamanic healers for about 5 days in the island of Jamaica. You do learn about living the natural lifestyle, and you also can get college credits for that course, where we actually go there, and that's our Echo Tours for Cures to Jamaica. We've been doing that for over 20 years every year. And, of course, it is fun as well as educational. Then we also have online courses proceeding in herbal medicine all the time, and those are CEU certified. And the people who get certification for those courses include acupuncturists, massage therapists, nutritionists, nurses, and midwives. So we have many, many professionals taking our class. That's through the Florida School of Holistic Living. And we have classes in how to use herbal medicine, homeopathy, aromatherapy. A whole realm of courses are going on, as well as a full residence retreat, which is the last weekend in February, and that is certified for all those professions as well. That particular seminar at the last week in February is almost sold out, so if you'd like to join us in Florida in the winter, it's a good time to be there. Get in touch and we'll send you registration information. And thank you so much for listening. We have a lot of listeners on this show, and I love your feedback. We have about 140,000 downloads of our show right here on Progressive Radio Network and counting. So we're really happy to have that. Today we have as our guest Dr. David Borenstein, healing mind, body, and spirit. That's what he says about his Manhattan Integrative Medicine Center. And we talked about stem cell therapy, which certainly makes Dr. Borenstein stand out because that's a specialty technique that is not widely available. I've heard of people going to Europe for it. As I said earlier in the show, I met someone on a plane from New York who flew all the way to Florida to get this, and I guess she didn't know that Dr. Borenstein is right here in New York, which makes it so convenient. I would say not too many people offer these particular interventions. Is that correct, Dr. Borenstein?
That's true. It's not not common. It's slowly catching on, primarily in the orthopedic world, less so in the neurological and autoimmune and cardiopulmonary world. There are more and more doctors who are doing it. Many of them are using bone marrow, which I find is not as good as using fat. But it's still relatively early. It still hasn't really caught on yet. But it probably will as we get more and more success with the treatments.
But you have many other therapeutics available as well. So one that we mentioned before we went to break is prolotherapy. So let's talk about what that is and how that can be helpful.
Sure. Well, prolotherapy was a technique that was invented actually in the 1930s. And it was actually one of the earliest forms of regenerative treatments. And basically, with prolotherapy is you're injecting an irritating solution into a joint, into a ligament, into a tendon. We use usually something called dextrose, which is a type of sugar, and lidocaine. And sometimes we add B12 or sodium chloride to make the agent stronger. And we actually inject that into the joint space and into the ligaments and tendons around the joint. What that does is it causes an inflammation. Growth factors then come from other parts of the body to this inflammatory area and start fixing and rebuilding the soft tissues in the area. The treatments are repeated every several weeks until we have strong ligaments and strong tendons and rebuilding of some cartilage in the knee or the any other joint that we're treating. It's unfortunately not as popular as other procedures like steroid injections. And the beauty of prolotherapy is, just think about how your body heals. When you hurt a part of your body, what happens? It swells, okay? It gets inflamed, because this is your body trying to heal. So what do doctors do? What we do conventionally is counterintuitive to healing. We give steroids to reduce the inflammation and the swelling, which is exactly the opposite of how your body heals. So it's very counterintuitive. With prolotherapy, we're causing a localized inflammation. It's setting a cascade for fixing the ligaments, tendons, cartilage, the joints, and causing healing. And it works very well. The problem is that it usually requires multiple treatments, as opposed to stem cells, which usually require one or two treatments at most. But for those who can't afford stem cells or don't want to do stem cell treatment, this is certainly an option to consider, especially if the problem is a little bit more more minor.
So it's certainly also worth worth a try. Now, would you have a range of options, like if someone came in with one of these issues with shoulder pain, neck pain, would you go right to stem cell or would you try prolotherapy first, or is there a prioritization of what you would use?
Well, it depends on the patient. It depends on many different things. Depends, number one, on the severity of the disease, okay? The more severe, the more extensive treatment we'd like to use. If it's a really bad problem, we like to use the stem cells. If it's not as bad, maybe the PRP, platelet-rich plasma, or the prolotherapy. And the second issue is price. To be very frank, not everyone can afford stem cells. It's not, an inexpensive procedure. And many patients will say, you know what, I want to get some benefit, but let me try something else. They may elect to do the prolotherapy or the PRP treatments, which cost a little bit less. But they require
people are listening today to you, and you are listening to Dr. David Borenstein and his center. That's the New York Stem Cell Center. Also, you can find him online at davidborensteinmd.com. So you talked about stem cells. That is probably new to many of our listeners. You talked about prolotherapy, which is an injectable technique. Now, what about PRP? What is that?
Platelet-rich plasma is a slightly more advanced treatment than the prolotherapy. Rather than using an irritant solution, which is basically sugar, water, and lidocaine, we use the growth factors from your platelets. So we take some blood out of you, we spin it in a centrifuge, we extract the plasma that's rich in platelets, and we inject that into the joint space, ligaments, and tendons. The idea is that you're actually injecting growth factors directly into the joint, as opposed to prolotherapy, where you're causing an irritation, causing growth factors from other areas to come. So it's a certainly a more powerful treatment. Certainly costs more, but it's a more powerful treatment than the prolotherapy. People like it. It's a good in-between. We can treat some moderate conditions with that. But sometimes you need to repeat the treatment. Sometimes you need 2-3 treatments for it to work really well. The stem cells, on the other hand, I have patients who come to me from Wall Street time is of the essence, and they really don't care what it costs. So they actually just do the stem cells and they leave. But not everyone is in that position. So we want to offer something to everybody to at least give them some benefit, and to help anyone who comes to our office who needs our help.
And you do offer many other things there as well. For instance, in the natural health community, we've heard of this, but many listeners may have never heard of it. What is low-dose naltrexone, LDN?
Oh, I'm really excited about low-dose naltrexone. Basically, LDN...
Well, good.
Yeah.
Tell us about it, doctor.
Yeah, actually, LDN, one of the founders, was actually developed here, right here in New York, by a Dr. Bahari. He was a neurologist. He actually used it in the 80s. Basically, naltrexone is a drug that we use primarily for addiction, but Dr. Bahari found by using one-tenth of the dose, he was able to modulate the immune system. And he used it in the 80s and treated many patients with AIDS and with many different types of malignancies. I primarily use it today for MS and Crohn's disease, occasionally for autism, but Crohn's and MS are my primary uses for them. Patients ask me for low-dose naltrexone just because they want to boost their immune system. They don't want to get any colds. Some cancer patients ask me for LDN. It's very inexpensive. It's less than $40 a month. We have to get it from a compounding pharmacy to make it for us. And the beauty of it has very little in the way of side effects, primarily vivid dreams and insomnia. And they usually improve over a few weeks of taking the medication. It's taken at night. It causes a blockage of opioids, which causes the body to increase its production of opioids 200 to 300%. These opioids then have an immune-modulating effect. We can give it as a capsule. We can give it as a cream. And, again, it's a very, very popular treatment for MS, for Parkinson's, for Crohn's disease, and for many other immune diseases. We've also used it for treating Hashimoto's and Graves' disease. Got to be a little bit careful, because what happens is many of these patients are on thyroid medication, and if the antibodies drop too quickly, you can make them hyperthyroid. So in those cases, we have to be a little bit careful and do the dosing very, very slowly. But other than that, it's one of the safest medications around. And again, one of these medications that can be, treat a wide variety of autoimmune diseases.
And another thing that I imagine you might be using for autoimmune disease is sublingual immunotherapy. What is that, and what do you use that for?
Sublingual immunotherapy is used instead of using allergy injections or allergy shots. Instead of injecting yourself every week, you can give yourself drops under the tongue of the antigen, slowly building up your tolerance to the antigen. And the beauty of it is it's done once a week. It's done every day. You don't have to see the doctor every week or every 2 weeks for an injection. You can come in every few months for it. And works really well with seasonal allergies, dust mites. We generally do not use it for food allergies, but it works pretty well with regular allergies.
And why would you choose not to use it for food allergies? Because at Dr. Grisella's, I'm just asking, we used the Lee Miller technique, where we actually did little teeny subcutaneous injections that people did take home and do for themselves. It was a similar technique. And we tested them both for the allergens you're talking about, as well as food allergens, and they got drops for that as well. But you don't... What would you do for food allergies?
Primarily, the best thing you can do for food allergies is to avoid the food for a period of time, depending on the severity, anywhere from 3 months to 6 months, and work on fixing your gut, taking probiotics, digestive enzymes, and avoidance. And that usually is the best way to treat the food allergy. And then after a certain period of time, reintroduce the food, but only every couple of days, every 4 days. Is a very common way of doing it. When you eat something every single day, you may develop, you know, a allergy or a sensitivity to it. You may not see it clinically, but it's many cases it is there. But I generally reserve the immunotherapy for the environmental, not so much for the food.
So, and you find you have good results, because I've seen excellent results.
Yes, we do. Absolutely, we do.
Very simple. It's not painful. It works better, I think, than conventional allergy shots. And also, do you test so that the amount is different for each person, or do you just have the standard liquids that they can take home with them?
What I do is I start with the lowest dose possible, and I give my patients a protocol. And for the first week, they take one drop, and then two drops, and then three drops. And then on the fourth week, they take a different vial. So you're slowly escalating. So no matter what your sensitivity is, as long as you're sensitive to it, we're not too concerned of how sensitive you are to it. We're just going to start everyone really low and bring it up slowly. And we find that works really, really well. It's very simple. We can put multiple antigens in one vial, and it works pretty well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all that information that you gave us. Believe it or not, we're coming to the end of the show. A lot of things that are probably new information for many of our listeners, so we were excited to have you on board today, Dr. Bornstein. So before we go off, could you just give us a little, you know, words of wisdom and your best contact information?
Sure. Well, my words of wisdom is, and I tell this for all my patients, you have to be your own advocate, and and especially today, you have to advocate for yourself because no one else is going to do it for you, especially with the way the medical system is today. So do your research, be your own advocate, read up on things. Remember, if you can do something naturally or an integrative way, I find that's the best approach. And if you have any interest in stem cells or anything that we do, for the stem cells, every patient who calls us, we do give a 10-minute free consult on the phone. So I'm more than happy to discuss stem cells with the patient. We give a 10-minute free consult. If they're interested, we have them come in. But this is a good way to screen because not everyone is going to be a candidate. And if you would like to contact us, our number is 212-262-2412. And the website is nystemcellcenter.com for the stem cells. And for our other integrative practice, it's www.davidborenstein.md.com.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bornstein, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, you can find us at naturalnurse.com, and we hope that you stay healthy.